Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you are tuning in to Therapy in a Nutshell here on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio. Today we're going to be talking about separation anxiety. And I'm not just talking about children, I'm talking about separation anxiety in adults. And I want to tell you exactly what it is and how to look for it. And by the end of the show, I want to give you some coping mechanisms for it. And I also want to give you some prevention ideas for separation anxiety. Because if you're a young parent, you can create separation anxiety in your children inadvertently, not because you mean to, but because you're doing certain things that create that anxiety in a kid. So I want to make sure you are aware of what that is and how to keep that from happening if you possibly can. All right, so let's talk about what exactly is separation anxiety. It's also known as SEP angst. Okay, that's how some people say it for short, SEP angst. They also sometimes call it SAD, which is separation anxiety disorder. SAD also can be what happens with a deprivation of light. Okay, so SAD sometimes gets called two different things, but I'm just going to call it separation anxiety. So let's look at what exactly is it. It is the fear of being separated from your major attachment figures. Okay, so it can be a child feeling frightened that they're going to be not attached to their parent, to their mom or their dad or both. It can be a parent facing separation anxiety, even when the child's doing okay. So it can happen to children, it can happen to adults. It generally happens when you're going to not be around that person, sometimes for a very brief amount of time, and sometimes over longer periods of time. I'm going to give you a bunch of different examples in a minute so you can hear different stories of separation anxiety that might make you go, oh, that's what I do. So basically what happens is you start to get separated from your major attachment figure. And at first you kind of protest. Think of kids screaming and reaching out for mom and they don't want someone else to pick them up, or they don't want to be left at school, or they don't even want to go to school, or they don't want to go to bed, they don't want you to leave the room. So there's a protest that happens, usually kind of a temper tantrum, screaming, crying. In adults, the protest can be very silent. You can just feel this deep anxiety inside, and you're protesting leaving your main attachment person. Then what happens is you enter into kind of a despair where you're sad, you feel depressed, you're nervous, you might feel really anxious inside, and that despair is characteristic of emotions that you don't want to feel. Okay, so it presents differently for different people. Then after a longer period of time, there can be detachment. After the despair happens for a while, you might try not to feel that despair by detaching from your major attachment figure. Okay, so that's kind of like the clinical way to look at separation anxiety. But we're going to look at it across a whole broad spectrum. Could your separation anxiety be so mild that you just feel a little bit nervous as you're dropping your child off for school or for daycare or preschool? Yes. Could you just feel a little bit nervous and anxious when you put your child down for bed and they're crying and you're trying to walk away and let them soothe themselves and go to sleep? Yes. So that can be some mild separation anxiety. Then let's take it all the way to the other end of the spectrum, where the separation anxiety is so huge that the anxiety is not tolerable. The temper tantrum, the acting out, the protest of separation anxiety is huge. I've had cases over my private practice of 30-something years that kids would throw such huge fits before going to school that their parents couldn't even get them in the car or could make them get dressed or get out the door because the protest, the temper tantrum, the screaming about going to school is so huge that there's no overcoming it. So look at it as that spectrum. It could be super mild where you hardly even say anything, you just feel it a little bit inside, all the way to so dysfunctional and so elaborate that it takes over the whole environment at the time of the separation anxiety. So let's look at some examples of separation anxiety. Generally, when we think of that, we think of children. So school refusal, where children refuse to get out of the car, refuse to go to school, get dressed for school, you can't even get them out of bed or whatever, can happen at any age. It can be a very young child not wanting to go to daycare. It can be a teenager not wanting to go to high school. So anything in between, school refusal is often a form of separation anxiety. Now, what causes that? It could be a huge gamut of things. It could be bullying at school, or fear of failure, or just being uncomfortable, or being so anxious and nervous that they can't self-soothe enough to overcome the anxiety. So if there is school refusal, and if you're thinking it's separation anxiety, you need to get to the bottom of what's causing it in order to begin to overcome the separation anxiety. So then let's go back a little further. What happens with attachment is that babies begin to learn what is called object permanence. And that's when a baby begins to realize that just because something is out of their vision doesn't mean it goes away. Like with a very young baby, you can cover up a toy and they don't go looking for it because they don't really get it, that it's still there. After a little while, the baby will throw the blanket away, or peekaboo doesn't work anymore when you hide your face. They don't laugh and giggle anymore because they get it, that you're under there. So object permanence is what begins to kick off separation anxiety. People are usually in tune to 10-month-old babies who don't want anybody to hold them but mom. And if somebody else picks them up, they'll kind of cry and reach their arms out to mom because they want to go back to their main attachment figure. That's when object permanence is really in there and they're getting it, that they don't want their main attachment figure to leave because they'll be out of their sight and they know that they're still there and they want them. So it begins, separation anxiety often begins around this time. And it's really important how parents handle it, because if you exacerbate the separation anxiety, you can create even more separation anxiety in your child. So I'm going to give you some techniques to not make that worse and not to make it happen, just creating it inadvertently on your own. So let's talk about a couple other examples. Let's say the baby or the young child doesn't have any separation anxiety, but the mom does. So the mom's kind of freaking out when she leaves her child at preschool. Or the dad is, the parent. Their anxiety can be kind of contagious if the kid recognizes, hey, my mom's upset that she's leaving me. I wonder why. Something must be wrong. Separation anxiety is also real common in college students. So I often tell kids when they're freshmen in college, or they've graduated high school, they're heading off to college, and they go away for college. I say, look, it is not unusual for you to have separation anxiety or get really homesick. Kind of the same thing, all right? Sometimes we call it homesickness. I'll say to them, by Thanksgiving, you might be so homesick and so uncomfortable that you come home for Thanksgiving and you don't want to go back because you want to be home. You have separation anxiety. You want to be where it's known and familiar and be by your main attachment figures, your mom and dad. And it's hard to be off in a new environment with new friends, doing new stuff, and having to succeed in school. So what I tell them is, if you have separation anxiety by Thanksgiving, don't be surprised. That's normal. Just hold it and ride through and go back to school. Because I'll tell you, by February or March, kind of at the latest, you'll be really glad you stayed and you'll be doing much better. But you've got to ride through that separation anxiety. What I have found out is, if they are prepared for that feeling, they aren't as frightened by it. They go, oh, this is that homesickness separation anxiety Dr. Patty told me about. Okay, I can do this. And they can hold the thought of further down the line, a few months down the line after they get back after winter break, that they're going to start to feel better. All right, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, I want to give you some more examples so that you can really get a handle on what is separation anxiety and how can you manage it and learn how to cope with it and how can you not inadvertently create it in your children. All right, we'll be back in a minute.
COVID-19 has changed the way we do business and the way we do human resources in our businesses. We have all had to learn how to pivot, renew, and thrive over the last 18 months. Join North State SHRM as they elevate human resources on Tuesday, October 26, 2021, from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. during North State SHRM's 5th Annual HR Summit. Human resources professionals, office managers, business owners, and staff involved in HR will be engaged and inspired while continuing their pursuit of professional development. Hear from a world-renowned keynote speaker and some top-tier legal and HR advisors. Join us in person at the Gaia Hotel or virtually on October 26th for North State SHRM's annual HR Summit. For tickets and information, visit northstatesHRM.org. That's northstatesHRM.org.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 1460.com.
I'm Lee Hole.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Room.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and we are talking about separation anxiety. For the break, I gave you an example of school refusal in children is almost always separation anxiety. Then we talked about the college student, who it's not unusual at all for an 18, 19-year-old going off to college to feel that homesickness and separation anxiety. So let's do another typical one. And that's a kid going off to a week at camp. And going away for camp and being gone for a week is excellent for 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds because it lets them practice dealing with that separation anxiety. I remember when my youngest went to camp and Wednesday was like parent night. So Wednesday during that week, you would drive to the camp and it was about 45 minutes away, and you'd visit. Well, she was fine until we got there to visit for that Wednesday night. Then whatever separation anxiety she was feeling came crashing down on her, and she did not want us to leave. And she was really upset and just wanted to come home. And it would have been better for her if we had just not gone up that midweek. And she would have just continued to do camp and not, you know, kind of manage her separation anxiety, but it came crashing in on her when we went to visit. So camp is often a first time that kids are away from home for any length of time. Sometimes they'll go off to stay with grandparents in a city further away or something like that, and they can have separation anxiety then too. So what you want to do is you want to think in terms of children beginning to build resilience on being away from home. My 4-year-old grandson has trouble spending the night. And when it's finally time to go to sleep, the last time he spent the night, he said, "Grandma, my stuffies can't sleep without me," because his stuffed animals were on his bed at home. So he ended up calling his parents to say goodnight, and his dad told him, it was so cute, he said, "I'll go in and tuck your stuffies in, they'll be okay." It was very cute. And he made it through the night, but his separation anxiety hit when it was finally time to go to sleep, and he wanted his familiar environment. So camp is a good practice thing. Little kids spending the night in a trusted, safe environment, like with grandparents, begins to build the resiliency to handle that normal separation anxiety that comes up when they're away from their main stomping ground and their main attachment figures. Same way with daycare and preschool. Those are things that get kids ready to go off and be at kindergarten for most of the day, because they begin to realize that they're attachment figure comes back to get them, and everything's going to be okay. Now, animals can also have separation anxiety. We had a dog, I just love this dog. Her name was Tiza, and she was a Vizsla. And as my husband, Rich, was getting really sick with behavioral variant frontal temporal degeneration, Tiza was a main attachment figure for him, and they were always together. Well, as Rich started to get more and more anxious with his brain disease, Tiza started getting more and more anxious, and she developed huge separation anxiety if she was away from Rich, and to the point where she clawed screens off the sliding glass doors and hurt herself, with made her paws bleed and all sorts of stuff like that. And that was separation anxiety that she was picking up on with Rich's anxiety. So animals can have separation anxiety as well, and that can take on a life of its own. Now, Tiza might have had something going on in her physically that we couldn't identify, but it was separation anxiety that she had as a dog. So looking at how people can feel anxious on this whole spectrum is really important. It's interesting for me because I never had separation anxiety until Rich died. And then he died almost 6 years ago now. And after he died, I had a harder time being away from my kids, my family. And they're grown adults, so it isn't like I felt like they needed me. There is a part of me that realizes the profound nature of huge loss and the grief that creates. And so somewhere deep inside of me, there's a little piece that fears more loss. So if I go away for 3 or 4 weeks going off to teach workshops or going on vacation, something like that, I'll start to get separation anxiety for my kids at about 2 weeks. And so 2 weeks is like my max, and then I start to get that kind of I just want to go home feeling. And then what I do is I just hold it. And that's one of the things I'm going to teach you how to do, is recognize what you're feeling and why, and look for the underlying fear of what is happening. So when I sit there and hold my separation anxiety and my homesickness, I recognize it is based on the fear of more loss, and that somehow if I have closer contact with my kids and grandkids, I don't fear losing them as much. And if you think about that, it's kind of funny. When they're across town, I'm not anxious. When I'm, when I was in Alaska for almost a month, then I felt it. When I was in Ireland for almost a month, I felt it. Because I was so far away that there's a sense inside that you don't have control. So separation anxiety is a desire to be safe and for those that you love to be safe. And it's a desire to attempt to have control over that safety. So I recognize that. I'm kind of educated about this stuff. And so I hold it. And if those of you who have listened to my podcast before know that I call that holding the dog poop. And I don't always call it poop, but my producer will beat me if I say the other word. So what it is a mess gets put in your hands, a mess of desire and control, of feeling anxiety, of fearing separation, of fearing loss and grief. And what I try to do is just hold that and acknowledge what I'm feeling, not judge it, not tell myself I'm being ridiculous or weak or stupid or anything like that. I just say, okay, you're feeling separation anxiety because you fear losing people, because you have lost people, and you know how difficult profound grief and loss is. Once you've experienced that, it's hard not to worry that you'll feel that feeling again. So let's look at that. Take it out of my example for a minute of just going on vacation and being away from my family. Put it into young parents who have maybe had miscarriages or stillbirths or have lost a child or have had a child get sick or injured. It's very hard to put that aside and say, everybody's safe. We're all good. I don't need to be nervous and anxious. That can be such a core level of fear that the desire for control, to keep everybody safe that's important to you in your life, and then you recognize you can't because you're far away or they're busy, or part of you goes, well, this is ridiculous. Why am I feeling like this? Then what happens is it just goes underground inside you. And anxiety is almost like a little nervous, anxious, burning sort of thing inside that makes you feel like, wow, I just want this feeling to stop. And it would stop if I felt like I had some control, or I got to see my attachment figure, either my children or my grandkids or my mom or dad if I was a little kid. Then the separation anxiety magically eases when you recognize that the desired person for you is okay. So one coping mechanism that I use is I will FaceTime. Like when I was in Alaska for almost a month, I would FaceTime with my kids and my grandkids, and I could feel that separation anxiety ease as the objects of my attachment were fine. And I would go, okay, good, I feel better. So I knew that that's what I was doing, and I knew I was looking for that sense of relief from that just little niggly feeling inside that I didn't like. And I also recognized I never used to have that until after Rich died. So I get the pairing of that and how it happens unconsciously inside me, and then I work to manage it. So pictures, videos, FaceTiming with people can give you that reassurance that everything's okay at home. And the other idea is to just hold that anxiety and recognize, I'm feeling anxious because I don't have control right now. What am I afraid of? And it's so funny, I tell people all the time, ask that question, what are you afraid of? And then the secret is to answer yourself. Because so often people say, what are you afraid of? Nothing. I'm not afraid of anything. They think of fear as the F word. And they say, I'm not afraid. But you are. And it doesn't have to be like you're afraid of the dark or you're cringing somewhere and you're crying. It can be just a little uneasy feeling inside that you want to have control to make sure that your attachment figures are safe and okay. That's called separation anxiety. So when you recognize that in yourself and you identify the fears, it doesn't necessarily make it just go away. What it makes is for you to understand it and to just hold it. You don't have to do anything with it. You don't have to fix it. And sometimes you can't fix it. You're not by a telephone, or you don't have a Wi-Fi signal. You can't FaceTime. You know, you just have to ride the feeling out. And that gets us back to how do we deal with separation anxiety in children? Because we want them to begin to learn to hold the space that they don't have to get anxious that this is going to end. So we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about how to put children down to sleep so that you don't inadvertently create separation anxiety in them, how to drop them off at daycare or school, and try to create resilience instead of anxiety. Okay, we're going to go to break, and we'll be back in a minute.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wing Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come. 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that, and it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple, naturally the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet, Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, this is Cindy at Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Fern Creek, and Airport Road. Come check out our sale October 18th through the 31st. With this fall weather, it's a perfect time to save big when ordering your sod for your yard or planting a winter garden. Garden Power soil is only $45.99 a yard. King Kong winterizer fertilizer for only $24.99 a bag. Need to update your tools? All hand tools, including shovels, rakes, picks, and more, all drastically reduced. Been wanting a patio or pathway? Base light pavers and retaining wall is all on sale. As always, Lauk's Landscape Supply carries all your sand, soils, barks, and gravels for your projects, whether you pick up or we deliver. Now's the chance to save big October 18th through the 31st at Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersch, Kern Creek, and Airport Road. Check us out on the web at louckslandscape.com or give us a call at 378-2220. Louck's Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. You're listening to the incredibly beautiful Native American flute music of Randy McGinnis. Cherokee Native American, speaks fluent Cherokee. He's won awards, tons of awards. It's hard to even list them all, but Native American Flutist of the Year, a Lifetime Achievement Award, CD of the Year. I mean, he's just won a lot of things. So, you can look up Randy's music at randymcginnis.com and see all six of his CDs, and you can get them there. You can also go to Spotify, Pandora, iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby, just about anywhere music is sold, and you'll find Randy McGinnis, Native American flutist, on those channels. Okay, we're talking about separation anxiety, that all the way from a little anxious feeling inside that just is kind of uncomfortable to huge, dysfunctional, diagnosable separation anxiety. So let's look at the idea that separation anxiety is a form of just regular old anxiety. People that have separation anxiety often will talk about having other forms of anxiety, sometimes something as big as panic attacks, sometimes just they tend to be an anxious person and worry a lot and can't shut their heads off and, fear losing people because they've lost people in the past. So that anxiety is something they are doing across the board in their lives. So one way to cope with separation anxiety is to listen to my podcast on anxiety and on anticipatory anxiety or performance anxiety and get the tools available just to treat regular old anxiety, because all those tools also will work for separation anxiety. Let's look at the idea of how parents inadvertently create separation anxiety in their children. Let's say that you're a young parent and you're putting your child to bed. And from a very early age, that child has some trouble self-soothing. Either they might be colicky or they may be a child that's genetically predisposed to a little bit of anxiety, or they're just not a great sleeper. So you find out that the baby either has to be nursed or given a bottle before it's put down. You rub its back and you gently soothe it and sing it a lullaby and do all these extraordinary things to get your child to sleep, partly because you're exhausted, partly because you know your child needs to sleep. But what you might be inadvertently doing is teaching your child that he or she needs you in order to soothe enough to fall asleep. So I learned this the hard way, actually, because as a new parent with my oldest daughter, we did just that. She had trouble going to sleep, and she inadvertently got very attached to needing her pacifier, her blanket, her teddy bear, and this little lambskin thing that she used to love, and us. One of us had to pat her back to get her to sleep or rock her. And she very quickly learned that she could protest enough that we would start supplying those needs. Now, the problem was, there's a natural waking cycle that we all have, including children. So when she went through a natural waking cycle in the middle of the night, and she didn't have all of those things, like if her pacifier fell out of the crib, and she couldn't find her blanket, and we weren't there to pat her back and soothe her and get her back to sleep, she would wake all the way up and scream and cry until one of us came in and supplied all her needed objects so she could go back to sleep. Well, this happened kind of like the frog in the boiling water, happened a little bit at a time until it became the routine. And she knew the routine and we knew the routine and everybody just needed to get some sleep. So we inadvertently did the routine over and over again. It wasn't until she was about 3.5 years old that I found the book by a guy named Farber called How to Solve Your Child's Sleep Problems. And I read that book and realized that we had done everything wrong. And what cracks me up is people say, well, you're a therapist. You should be able to do everything right. It doesn't work that way. Sorry. We get to be human beings. So we did everything wrong in putting her to sleep. So when we had baby number two, we were much more highly trained. And also, parents of baby number two are less anxious. You know, baby number one, you don't want anybody changing their diaper. You don't want anybody to dress them. You want to do it all yourself. You want to be there constantly and not trust anybody with anything. Baby number two, you're like, you want to change a diaper? Sure, go ahead. You know, because you realize that kids survive a strain, you know, the grandma changing the diaper or whatever. So it's okay to begin to relax as you recognize you don't have to have full control all the time. So when we put baby number two to bed, she was put down to soothe herself to sleep. So we purposely put her down while she was still awake. We dressed her warmly enough that if she kicked her blanket off or something like that, she wouldn't wake up because she was cold, and she wouldn't have to go looking for the blanket that she fell asleep with. She had a pacifier when she was very young, but we took that away by about 5 months so that she didn't get overly attached to it, but she also didn't suck her thumb. Two good things. Overly attached to the pacifier, very hard. Sucking your thumb, very hard. It's hard to stop kids from sucking their thumb. So we did it right, and she became a good sleeper. She became very good at self-soothing and falling asleep on her own, and she slept through the night by 5 or 6 months because she'd been trained how to fall asleep and how to get back to sleep when she did a normal waking cycle. So we were good parents, but we inadvertently created that kind of separation anxiety in our oldest. So then when our oldest went off to preschool, she had a very hard time with us leaving her there. So when she was two and going off to preschool for a couple half days a week, she had to have her blanket and her pacifier and her teddy bear, and she carried a picture of me with her stuff so that when she was having a separation anxiety wobbly, her preschool teacher would hand her the picture of me and she'd carry that around. So we thought we were helping her soothe, but we actually were inadvertently reinforcing the separation anxiety. So learn from my mistakes here, guys. There's a way to do it so that you recognize, I want my child to be strong enough and resilient enough to handle a separation. So you have to let them cry themselves to sleep. Now, I'm not saying that they scream for 3 hours. You know, even in the book, How to Solve Your Child's Sleep Problems, he talks about letting them cry for 10 minutes. Then you go in and you say, everything's okay, and mommy and daddy are right here. And then you leave, and you don't put them to sleep. You just go in and offer a little bit of reassurance. So we had to go through a whole lot of steps to get our eldest to sleep through the night. And we had to slowly take ourselves away from her, a little bit at a time, until we were sitting across the room and she's self-soothing. Then pretty soon we were sitting outside the door and she could see us. Then we sat outside the door where she couldn't see us, but she could hear us sitting there talking or something like that. And we very slowly moved her into being able to be resilient with her own separation anxiety. We also did the same thing eventually with preschool. But I never put the two together, that her separation anxiety with sleeping was no different than her separation anxiety getting left at preschool. And we were inadvertently creating more of a separation anxiety problem than we were aware of. So over the years, I've taught other people that you need to have a drop-off ritual when you take your kids to school. If you prolong it and you keep hugging and you keep kissing and you keep offering reassurance, you're actually feeding into the separation anxiety and making it worse. If you have a simple yet straightforward separation plan so that you leave your child at school and say, okay, I'll be back after your nap time, or at the end of the day when everybody's going home, I will be here to pick you up, or I'll be at the bus stop. Whatever it is, you offer when you're going to be home or be back to get your child, and then you leave. If you are so upset by the screaming and crying that you are having huge separation anxiety yourself, don't go back in. You will make it worse. If you have to, call the school and say, when I left, my child was just having a huge fit, and I just want to make sure that she calmed down. You'll often hear, oh, yeah, 2 minutes after you left, she was fine. And then you go, oh, wait a minute. You've been struggling with it for 2 hours till you finally call, and they were fine 2 minutes later. And that's often what happens. When kids see that the wobbly they're having over their separation is not going to get them more reassurance, then they'll learn how to shut it down and not do it. And that's what we're trying to build for kids. We want them to be resilient, not to be weaker from our anxiety when we leave them. Now, is that making sense to you? I just want you to see that we don't want to inadvertently reinforce the separation anxiety. Remember, when we're talking about getting rid of behaviors that are not healthy, any kind of attention, whether it's negative attention or positive attention, will reinforce that behavior to happen again. So let's say your child's having a wobbly getting left at preschool, and you start yelling at them, and you come back and you say, "Now you stop that. No, 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 no." And you're being very strict and stern with them. That's negative attention. You are reinforcing that if you have another wobbly, I will come back in and I will yell at you. So negative attention does not necessarily stop something. The thing that stops a behavior most is called extinction. And that's where you pay absolutely zero attention to it. Your child's having a wobbly when you leave them. You offer your time return. You do your closing routine for leaving them there, and you leave. And you don't turn around and go back, because that negative reinforcement is going to make that behavior happen again. When you extinguish it by walking away and giving it as little attention as possible, the chance of the child learning resiliency becomes higher. And that's the same thing we want to do when we're putting them to bed, or when they're spending the night at Grandma and Grandpa's and they're having a hard time learning how to spend the night. We don't want to rescue them if we can help it. Okay? And it's not a rule that's hard etched in stone, you guys. You've got to use your judgment, and you have to be good parents. But you also want to keep in mind, I want to build resiliency for my child. So you've got to work toward that. And you have to have a goal in mind. I want to be able to drop my child off at preschool and they walk in happily and I leave feeling calm and everything's good. So you have to recognize it as separation anxiety, and you have to look at your own part that you might play. Now, it's not surprising that parents who struggle with anxiety often create anxiety in their own children, because anxiety is about trying to manage fear and trying to have control over a situation so you don't have to be afraid. And anxiety is like, I just want everything to be okay. I just want to fix it. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to worry about the people that I love. And that's, you know, in this world, it's impossible to never worry about the people that we love. And is loss possible? Yeah. And we're smart enough to know that, which is why we get anxious and we fear things and we want to have control. All right, so that's the picture I'm trying to paint for you of how, as parents, we can inadvertently create separation anxiety in our children. But the really good news is you can uncreate it, okay? We did that with our oldest daughter. She learned how to go to sleep by herself. She learned how to stay at school by herself without having a wobbly every time we left. It just took determination and us recognizing what we were doing that was inadvertently creating the anxiety. All right, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, I want to give you some more skills on how to handle this.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 at 1460 AM.
Are you not getting treatment for a work injury because of denials? Call me, Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, at 530-262-2168, and I will get you results. The insurance company and your employer have an attorney working hard for them. You need somebody fighting for you. When you call Gorman Law, you're going to speak with me, not a paralegal, because the last thing you should be worried about is whether or not your attorney is working for you. There's no cost until your case is settled. Consultations are free and confidential. Call today, 530-262-2168. That's 530-262-2168.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Welcome back to Therapy in a Nutshell. This is Dr. Patty, and we are talking about separation anxiety, not just in kids, but separation anxiety for anybody, adults, kids, anyone. It's a feeling inside that you just want to have control, and you don't want to be afraid anymore for your main attachment figures. And so you start to figure out, what can I do to not feel this feeling, because I really don't like this feeling inside. Anxiety sucks. Any of you that suffer with it, you'll know. Anxiety sucks. All right, so parents can unknowingly increase or perpetuate separation anxiety in their children. And it's often parents who struggle with anxiety themselves. So if you know you are an anxious person, it really behooves you to learn how to handle your own anxiety, because you will create anxiety in others, especially your kids, because you're modeling it for them. And what you're actually modeling for them is fear. Be afraid of your environment. Be afraid of losing people. Be afraid of loss and grief. Try to control everything and keep stuff from changing or evolving in a way that you don't like. And that's the real basis for separation anxiety. It can take on a vicious cycle where it's self-perpetuating. The more anxious you get, the more you try and control it, the less you feel you can control it, so the more anxious you get, and the more things you try to do to not feel that nasty feeling inside. So your child gets that, and then your child requires more and more reassurance. And as you begin to supply that reassurance, you are inadvertently increasing and perpetuating the separation anxiety. So in dealing with this, the very first goal is to understand what separation anxiety is. It's something that is often helped by therapy. If you don't know what is creating that anxiety within yourself, going and figuring that out, what your core issue is really important. If I weren't so aware of grief and loss and what anxiety feels like, I might have had kind of an unconscious response to my own separation anxiety when I was gone for a long enough period that I began to really miss my kids and my family. But I knew enough to say, this is separation anxiety. You never used to have it. You only had it since Rich died. And you began to recognize that profound loss and grief is really possible. And it isn't like I didn't know that before. I did know that before. But knowing it and experiencing it can be two drastically different things. Once you've experienced profound loss and grief, it's something you don't want to feel again, because it is so incredibly debilitating. It's so horrid. And I don't ever want to feel that again. But, you know, chances are in this lifetime I'm going to lose somebody else, and I have to deal with it. When my mom died, who we were really close, I had to deal with that a few years ago. She died a couple of years after Rich did. So we don't want to inadvertently create separation anxiety in ourselves or in our children. So you do this by having really healthy sleep routines. That's called sleep hygiene. How you put your children to bed the same way over and over again every night, so that they know what to expect. They know how to get in bed and fall asleep by themselves. They don't have to have somebody singing them a lullaby or patting their back or rubbing their back or tickling their arm or whatever parents tend to do to try and soothe their child till they fall asleep. That's not healthy, and it does not allow them to get back to sleep on their own in the middle of the night. So you're inadvertently creating bad sleep patterns. How many adults out there have horrid sleep patterns and they're constantly waking up and have trouble getting themselves back to sleep due to anxiety? So we don't want to create that in our children. So having a healthy and consistent sleep routine is really important from the time your children are born, and beginning to put that in place as they get old enough to make it without nursing every few hours. You know, that they're starting to become more consistent in their eating and when you can get them to sleep. The other thing is to have a very consistent leaving routine. When you leave the child at home with a babysitter, or you take them to daycare or preschool, or you leave them with grandma and grandpa, you don't prolong your leaving. You have your leaving routine that says, here's grandma and you're going to stay with grandma for a few hours and I'll be back to get you after you take your nap or whatever. You give them a time frame that they can understand. If you tell a 2-year-old I'll be back at 3 o'clock, that means nothing to them. But to tell them after you take your nap and you have your snack, that's about the time I'll be coming back. They can relate to that. So you have a leaving routine that's pretty much the same. It is not prolonged and drawn out. You don't show your anxiety about leaving. If you feel any, try to keep it to yourself. If you're really anxious that your child had a wobbly when you left, don't go back. Once you get away and you get to your office or you get where you're going, call the daycare, call the preschool and say, how is Sally doing? Is she okay? All right. The other thing is it's okay to have some transition objects. We'll see kids go to preschool with their favorite stuffed animal or a corner of their blanket or, like in my child's case, all 5 things that she had to have when she was young. Here's my firstborn. My second one walked in, you know, like a boss, but that's because we did it differently, not because we didn't create separation anxiety in her. We had inadvertently created it in our eldest. So it's okay for kids to have a transition object like, you know, their blanket or their teddy bear or whatever. But you want to begin to not have an over-attachment to that transition object because, you know, how many sixth graders do you see that go to school with the corner of their blanket in their fingers, like the little silky part? They'll get teased. It's not okay. So beginning to wean them away from their transition object is important. Like, for example, they get out of the car and they leave that blanket by their car seat. You don't go running back and give it to them. Later, when they're upset because they left their blanket, you can say, yeah, but you did a really good job staying at school all day without your blanket. That was great. You reinforce that they can begin to leave their transition objects and not to have too many transition objects. And it's also really important if you don't have just one. Like if the certain corner of the blanket is the one they have, try to have them have multiple blankets. Any blanket could work, even if it's in the washing machine. They don't have to stand there and stare at the washing machine until the blanket's out. So we're looking at transition objects as a pathway for resiliency. We want kids to not fear separation. We want them to step into the knowing that their attachment figure is going to return. So we want healthy sleep routines, we want healthy leaving routines, and we want very few transition objects that we set our intention that they're not going to have forever. And we're encouraging them, not forcing them to give up their transition object, but encouraging them not to have to need it. And one way to do that is if their one transition object is a certain teddy bear, and you maybe say, yes, you can take a stuffed animal to preschool with you, go pick one out. You don't inadvertently reinforce that they have to have that one teddy bear. Because if they take a stuffed animal to preschool, it's easier to give up taking a stuffed animal to preschool than if they are so overly attached to that one transition object that it's harder for them to give that up. And again, this is not set in stone where you're now going to become like, you know, the stuffed animal Nazi. That's not what we want. But we want you to be aware of your own behavior that could inadvertently begin to create anxiety in your child. You don't want to make that worse. Okay, so just in summation, Separation anxiety is a form of regular old anxiety, and it can be all the way from very, very mild to something very, very huge. And that's what we want to avoid, is separation anxiety happening to be so devastating that somebody can't function. And that's hard on kids. It's hard on adults. So recognize it for what it is, that it is a fear of lack of control. It is a fear of loss and grief that you're going to lose somebody very, very important to you, which is one of your attachment figures. Now, do we ever see kids that don't attach? Yes. In fact, there's a thing called radical attachment disorder, where often kids that are constantly ripped away from their attachment figures, like foster children, can begin to have trouble attaching to anyone because their psyche automatically assumes everyone's going to leave me. So they learn from a very early age not to attach, and that can become dysfunctional in and of itself. So the fact that a child does attach to their parents or does attach to their primary caregivers is a good thing. We want to teach children attachment because healthy attachment is what creates healthy relationships. We just don't want that attachment to be so dysfunctional that you're trying to control the attachment in every which way possible so that you never experience any kind of pain or anxiety or separation anxiety. So I hope you're following me on exactly what separation anxiety is, because this is what makes it so we can learn how not to do it for ourselves and how not to create more of that in our children. All right. So some ways that you can learn more about anxiety. If you go to my podcast, Dr. Patricia Bay, Therapy in a Nutshell podcast, it's on every podcast forum I've seen, Spotify, iTunes, Audible.com, Anchor.fm. It's on every podcast. If you just put in a Google search for Dr. Patricia Bay, Therapy in a Nutshell podcast, then peruse all the titles. There's about 120 plus titles now. And when one jumps out at you, like anxiety or depression or performance anxiety or anticipatory anxiety or standing in your truth or loving yourself, there's a whole ton of them. If one jumps out at you, you probably need to listen to that one because it will help you manage this. If you have been struggling with separation anxiety with your own child, you and your partner listen to this podcast once it gets put up on the podcast, which will be this afternoon, and say, we need to start doing this differently. If you have a child that does not sleep well, then think about getting the book, Solving Your Child's Sleep Problems, by Farber. It's F-A-R-B-E-R. And he does an excellent job describing how to fix your kid's sleep problems. If you have a brand new baby, read that book and don't do it wrong from the beginning. Take a lesson from me. You could have a child that sleeps through the night very quickly, like our second one did. All right. So this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and you've been listening to Therapy in a Nutshell, and we've been talking about separation anxiety. And on this show, Therapy in a Nutshell, I just want to help heal the world 1 hour at a time.
News from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.